Good morning and welcome to the March term of court held here at the University of South Dakota School of Law. For those of you who are mathematically inclined, you probably noticed we have four justices this morning instead of the usual five. That is because Justice Konenkamp, a member of this court, has undergone some surgery and is recuperating nicely. But this will preclude him from personally appearing today. However, he will fully participate in all the cases. He is listening to the oral arguments on the internet and will conference with the court this afternoon by telephone, and he sends his greetings. The first case for oral argument this morning is Peggy Detmer's appellants and others versus Kevin Costner and the Dunbar Inc. appellees. For the appellants, we have Mr. Andrew Damgard and Mr. Russell Janklow, attorneys from Sioux Falls. Mr. Damgard, I understand you'll be presenting this morning.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and for the appellees, we have Mr. Kyle Reese and Mr. James Nelson. Mr. Reese, I understand you'll be presenting this morning.
That's correct, sir.
Very well. Mr. Damgard, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Andy Damgard, and along with Russ Janklow, we represent Peggy Detmers and Detmers Studio Incorporated. We're asking that the trial court's decision in this case be vacated and that the case be remanded for a determination of whether the sculpture should be sold pursuant to paragraph 3 or for the trial court to consider the additional remedy of money damages in this case.
Are you saying you're entitled to a new trial or you win as a matter of law?
We're saying that we win as a matter of law.
All right.
Our arguments, simply put, are first, elsewhere does not mean anywhere in a contract. Elsewhere has to be given meaning. Second, that this Tatanka site in 2003 was not intended to be a standalone entity so as to constitute elsewhere, and the trial court erred in that regard. Third, that whether Detmers reasonably relied on this resort being built in 2003 was not the correct standard to apply. And fourth, finally, that the trial court erred as a matter of law in holding that a literal interpretation of this contract would produce an absurd result. Two fundamental principles of contract law, I think, apply here. And that number one is that terms in a contract, just like terms in a statute, are to be given meaning if you can do so consistently and reasonably. The standard isn't to ignore a term or to give the term a different meaning. And those terms are also given their plain and ordinary meaning when we're dealing with a contract. The trial court in this case initially interpreted elsewhere as somewhere other than the resort. And our quarrel essentially isn't with that. It's that the trial court went on to marginalize elsewhere to the point of undefining it. And what the trial court held was that because the Dunbar had not been built and was non-existent, that any site in the world was elsewhere. This essentially interpreted the word elsewhere as anywhere. There's several other problems, I think, with the trial court's analysis. The first is temporal. I think it's pretty easy to see in 2010 or 2011, when we have the benefit of knowing that the Dunbar was not built by 2010, that the sculptures are sitting out by themselves, separate and apart from the resort. But when this agreement was made, it was in 2003, in which there was another 7 years for Mr. Costner to build the Dunbar. There was a 7-year window, and I think it's undisputed. In fact, there's a factual finding that Mr. Costner put these sculptures on the same property that he owned and intended for the Dunbar 7 years prior to the latest date it was anticipated to be completed. And at the time the sculptures were placed there, he's unequivocal that he still intended to build the Dunbar on that site.
Well, isn't that the key? I mean, that's the crux of it. You use the word property. And property has a geographic meaning to it, whereas the Dunbar seems to be a hotel that doesn't necessarily have a geographical property. And when you look at the phrase of the contract, it says the Dunbar will be built within 10 years or the sculptures displayed elsewhere. So elsewhere has to refer back to the Dunbar. And does the Dunbar mean a physical hotel or is it a geographical place?
Well, you know, I think it can be both, but I think you have to have a frame of reference to use the word elsewhere, number one. And number two, I think if we do look at the contract.
But the contract doesn't refer to a property.
No, but the contract clearly shows that the parties contemplated, number one, that the Dunbar may not be built in 10 years, and they also contemplated that if that were the case, the sculptures would have to be agreeably displayed elsewhere. And that would be independent of whether or not the Dunbar was built, because we know if the Dunbar was built within 10 years, the second condition, whether they agreeably were displayed elsewhere, becomes irrelevant. So we know that we're not going to look at agreeably displayed elsewhere until the Dunbar is not built. Now we're looking at it, and they still use the term elsewhere, which I think indicates that they had a frame of reference, and that, of course, it was possible to agreeably display your sculptures at the Dunbar in the absence of the actual resort, the bricks and mortar.
So, but your argument, then, if I understand it, is that elsewhere refers to a geographical location.
That's correct, and it refers to what their intent was at the time in 2003, because they contemplated the Dunbar may not be built within 10 years, but at the same time, there's still a seven-year window. So if they're out at the property that was owned and intended for the Dunbar, placing the sculptures 7 years prior to that, and Costner testifies under oath that it was still his intent to build the Dunbar, I don't think that you can find agreeably displayed elsewhere as a matter of law. In fact, I think, if anything, you'd find that they were agreeably displayed with the intent that they would ultimately become part of the resort, which was Costner's intent.
You say as a matter of law, is that a legal question or a factual one?
Actually, I think the ultimate determination of whether the sculptures were agreeably displayed elsewhere is properly characterized as a factual question, but it's one that's driven entirely by a legal determination, and that is how you're going to define elsewhere and what frame of reference you're going to give it.
Because
in other words, I'm sorry.
Despite the pretrial ruling that there was no ambiguity, you get a trial on this issue. It's not disposed of by a summary judgment.
Correct. And the ruling that there was no ambiguity, if we give that context, what had happened was Costner filed that motion to use parole evidence. And if you look in the record, it's attached to the affidavit of Mr. Nelson. It was several contracts that pre-existed this contract that were never executed is what Costner sought to use. And our argument was that, no, this contract isn't ambiguous in the sense that you need parole evidence. Ultimately, you'll need extrinsic evidence to figure out where elsewhere is, but extrinsic evidence is different, of course, than parole evidence because it can arise after and it's not used to vary or contradict the terms. In terms of some of the sub-issues, I'd like to address whether the Dunbar was intended as a standalone entity. The trial court really didn't have to reach any of these rulings. If elsewhere was to be interpreted as anywhere, the case should have been over. We're not here disputing that there was an agreement in 2003 to display the sculptures on resort property or that Mr. Costner intended that the resort was still going to be built. But the trial court went on, made several additional findings, one of which was that Tatanka in 2003 was always intended to be a standalone entity. This would be a factual determination, but we think it is in clear error. If you look at the balance of the record, it does not support that assertion. The architect testified that the sculptures would absolutely be part of the resort should it be built. He testified that everything they did in 2003 with respect to the placement of Tatanka was to accommodate the future construction of the resort. The exhibits, if you look at the blueprints from back in 2003, show the sculptures in relation to the resort and in relation to some of the buildings. Those exhibits also say that the sculptures have been put on resort property. The trial court essentially overlooked all of this evidence and cites three newspaper articles for the proposition that Tatanka was intended to be a standalone entity. I don't know whether he'd be able to discard all that evidence, rely on the newspaper articles, but even if he could, two of the three newspaper articles do not support that proposition. In fact, one of them claims that Costner chose his own resort for the display of the sculptures. The other newspaper article claims that the Dunbar is delayed, but it's still going to be built. And the final newspaper article is the one that quotes Wiss, who is the architect, that Tatanka was intended to be a standalone tourist attraction. But, of course, we had Wiss testify at trial. And Mr. Janklow asked him, What do you mean by standalone? What Mr. Wiss testified to was, well, I would consider the swimming pool standalone. I would consider the hotel standalone. I would consider the golf course standalone. Even if that's true, I don't think that would constitute elsewhere as it's plainly and ordinarily understood. They're all part and parcel of the resort. And I think I could probably say that this school is a standalone school, but if I represented that it was located somewhere other than the University of South Dakota, I don't think that would fly. So we think that that finding was in clear error. In terms of the reasonable reliance, I think that would have been the appropriate standard in this case if it were a negligent misrepresentation case, a deceit, a fraud case, an equitable case, promissory estoppel. Those are all elements. It's not an element in a breach of contract. And in fact, the standard was exactly the opposite. The standard here wasn't whether she could reasonably rely on resort being booked, but whether he procured her agreement to display the sculptures elsewhere, somewhere other than the resort. That was the affirmative standard. The trial court didn't apply that. And I should say the reason the trial court came up with the you are never guaranteed, never promised defense was that it's very clear from the record that people were telling her that the resort was still intended to be built, that it was still intended to be built on that property, whether that's Mr. Wiss or Mr. Costner or Mike Reynolds, who was late as 2005, when he was COO of Dunbar, was telling her that the resort was still planned to be built. So the trial court couldn't make a finding that she wasn't being told the resort was not going to be built, because that would have been clear error. So what his finding was, hey, she may have been told the resort was going to be built, but nobody promised her and nobody guaranteed her the resort was going to be built. But we don't think that's the standard. It was quite to the contrary. If they're going to promise or guarantee her anything, they should have said, we're not going to build the resort, or if we do, it's going to be located somewhere other than here. That's how you would have effectively procured her agreement to display it elsewhere. Finally, as to the absurdity holding, this is also a question of law. An absurd result, by its very definition in your case law, is a result that the parties very likely would not have agreed upon and very likely would not have envisioned. The result in this case is not absurd. It's exactly the result that the parties agreed to in paragraph 3, and that is if the Dunbar were not built in 10 years or the sculptures not agreeably displayed elsewhere, they'd be sold.
But isn't the absurdity argument tied into the investment of the $6 million by Mr. Kastner and the Tatanka site?
I think it is, and I don't know that whether people are held to their contractual obligations is dependent upon how much money they've spent. Mr. Kastner would have incurred expense anyhow, because under paragraph 4, those sculptures had to be displayed somewhere on an interim basis, whether that would have been in Hill City or Deadwood, so he would have incurred some expense in that regard. He will also recoup every dime that he has in creating these sculptures. That's what paragraph 3 provides before our client gets anything. And part of the decision, I think, to put them on resort properties, it made some economic sense. And where you'll find support for that in the record is if you go to the trial court's memorandum decision at page 11, and it's also footnote 11. He quotes Mr. Costner at length, the trial court does. And when Mr. Costner starts talking about when he was considering putting these sculptures in Deadwood, he says, and he's referring to a conversation he had with Ms. Detmers, quote, we will bypass this placing in Deadwood only to have to move them. So what that tells you is if you were going to put them in Deadwood at an interim basis, he would have incurred some expense. He still intended to build a resort, because you wouldn't have to move them if you didn't intend to build a resort. And then you'd have to incur additional expense of moving them to the resort and going through it again. So I think, in a sense, this decision made economic sense, because you could put the sculptures on the resort property and build the resort up around them. Ultimately, as part of the economic consideration, I think that's what drove the trial court's decision in this case, is I don't think the trial court favored this result. But that being said, it wasn't his obligation to relieve Mr. Costner of a bad bargain, if that's how it looks in hindsight. Unless there's any other questions, I'll reserve the rest of my comments for rebuttal.
Okay. Any questions from the bench? If not, thank you, Mr. Damgaard.
Thank you.
Mr. Weiss, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, Mr. Damgaard. My name is Kyle Weiss, and I, along with Jim Nelson, represent Kevin Costner and the Dunbar, Inc. We are here today to urge this court to affirm the trial court's decision that these parties agreed to display these sculptures at somewhere other than the Dunbar, and that the parties did not breach their contract. Specifically, Mr. Costner did not breach this contract. The trial court made two specific findings that are very important to this decision and that were essentially factual issue at trial, and that is that Tatanka was always considered its own standalone site, separate and apart from the Dunbar. That is one specific finding. And the second finding that's important is that although Detmers claimed that she did not agree to the Dunbar, that she did not agree to Tatanka if the Dunbar was not built, the trial court specifically found that the facts presented at trial belie her assertions.
At the time the contract was entered into, did the concept of Tatanka even exist?
At the time that the contract, if we're talking about the May 5th contract, Your Honor.
The letter that Costner sends and she basically signs off on that gets us here this morning.
Sure. My understanding from the record is that the concept of an independent site called Tatanka, where the Buffaloes would be the centerpiece, was not understood by the parties at that time. At that time, you'll see in the finding fact number 4 that the parties intended the sculptures to be displayed in front of the hotel. And that's a specific finding of fact made by the trial court.
So how can Tatanka even be relevant to the contract if the concept didn't exist at the time the contract was entered into?
Because the contract contemplates putting these sculptures at some other place than the Dunbar. So the other place became Tatanka. And I think that was the essentially factual inquiry that the trial court was asked to determine. Was Tatanka its own standalone site? Or was Tatanka just a part of the Dunbar? You know, the testimony throughout the entire trial reflects that Mr. Costner at least believed, and the trial court agreed with his testimony, that Tatanka was always considered its own standalone site. And let me review a little bit of the record. Mr. Costner testified that, "I will dedicate this area whether the hotel is built or not. This will now be a permanent place for them." And he told the trial court that he explained this to Ms. Detmers and that she agreed. He explained that he would not have put this many resources into this site unless she agreed that this was going to be a permanent place. And I think the other testimony, you know, and I think this is significant, when asked by counsel whether or not this was elsewhere, because they did specifically ask Mr. Costner whether this was elsewhere, his response was this: "They were agreeably displayed up on 85 acres. They weren't displayed at the Dunbar or where the Dunbar was going to sit. There was now a dedicated area. It was different than the Dunbar."
But it's part of the Dunbar. What was it, 1,000 acres or something? I don't recall the exact number.
I think it's approximately 1,000 acres was the land that Costner owned that he intended to build the Dunbar on.
And it was on that geographical site.
At the time that it was dedicated, it was on its own 85 acres.
But that 85 was within the 1,000.
I would say at the time, the Dunbar was 915 acres and Tatanka was 85 acres. It was partitioned off, surveyed off to be its own separate location. And in fact, its own entity, Deadwood Land Holdings, was now the owner of record of that property. And Mr. Costner understood, at least, that because the hotel wasn't going to be built, or he wasn't sure if it was going to be built, that the parties were agreeing to put these there for the long term. And his testimony throughout the entire trial was to that effect. If I can read a little bit more, he says, Costner testified this is no longer going to be a fountain, because the parties intended that it was going to be in front of the Dunbar Hotel. There was going to be a dedicated spot where people could go and really look at this thing, he says. This is going to be a place that it's a centerpiece. The centerpiece was her sculptures. It was not now going to be a feature of something else. He told Ms. Detmers he could do this, guarantee this, and it would be the permanent home. This is a testimony that the trial court listened to. And sure, he did listen to Peggy Detmers get on the stand. He watched her demeanor, listened to her testimony, looked at her in the eyes, and he was the one to determine who was to be believed. He believed Kevin Costner. He believed that she agreed to put these there at a standalone, separate site from the Dunbar. This is not the Dunbar any longer. First, it's clear from the record that Kevin Costner believed the Dunbar was a hotel that needed to be built. This is supported by the finding of fact number 4, which does in fact say that the parties intended to put the sculptures in front of a hotel. It was that intent that led to this contract.
Why was it that was important, that the sculptures be placed in front of the motel or hotel?
I believe the testimony reflected that it was important to put them in front of the hotel because that way the people that came to visit the hotel would see them, and therefore it would somehow give royalties. There's a better chance of getting royalties.
So more high rollers would go to the hotel than would go to the museum.
I believe that is consistent with the testimony, but I believe that would go to the weight of the testimony. Mm-hmm. You know, that would go to the weight of the decision that the trial court had to determine. He had to look at what Ms. Demers was saying, and she did testify that, I was expecting to have all these royalties, and I agree that goes to the weight of the decision of what the facts were. But I also think it's the trial court's decision, and it's his place to give certain weight to the testimony, to weigh the testimony and make a decision. Pat Wiss also confirmed that this was a dedicated, independent site. He claimed that the 85 acres was divided off as a standalone acreage by itself. He said that not all of the activity for the resorts were going to be independent and separate. And I believe if you closely read that transcript dialogue where he's cross-examined regarding the 85 acres and the standalone nature, he actually says that he wouldn't consider all of those independent sites. He didn't equate the Tatanka site to a swimming pool or a golf course or anything else. He said this was going to be an independent site. It would be a place all of his own. And he actually used the word destination. Now, this is going to be, quote, the complete experience. It wasn't going to be a feature of something else. So I think what the trial court was asked to do, and what Detmers is asking this court to do now on appeal, is look at the evidence. But I don't think it's this court's position to do that, and I think the court would agree that the trial court had the opportunity to listen to all of that testimony about whether or not this was intended to be elsewhere, whether or not this was going to be a separate site, separate and apart from a Dunbar, whether the Dunbar ever exists. And here the Dunbar doesn't exist.
You know, what difference does all that make? I'm not sure I see what the importance of the findings of fact are, because both parties in this case have agreed that the contract is unambiguous. So isn't it a question of law? Just what does that language mean?
I think, Your Honor, it's not just a question of law. I don't think we could just say the trial court had a trial for nothing. I think the trial court was asked to both interpret the contract and look at the facts and determine whether or not Tatanka became elsewhere, whether or not that term did include the Tatanka site, or whether or not that met the definition of the term. And I think the trial court's legal interpretation of that contract was correct. You know, if the Dunbar wasn't built, where is elsewhere? Well, it's any other place. I think that's a logical, common sense interpretation that gives all meaning to the terms, to all the terms of the contract. Just because it happens to have the same meaning as anywhere doesn't mean the trial court necessarily rewrote the contract. So here, because the Dunbar wasn't built, wherever the parties agreed to display the sculptures would be elsewhere. And I mean, if you look at the judge's memorandum decision, back in 2007, the prior decision regarding the ambiguity, he says that paragraph 3 requires the sculptures to be displayed at a location that is agreeable to both parties. That's exactly what he said.
All right. Well, Mr. Weiss, does the importance of the word elsewhere, is it still important if she agreed to that site? Isn't that one of the factual issues the trial court addressed?
I'm not quite understanding your question.
One of the factual issues was whether or not she agreed to the site, was it not?
That's correct.
Well, if she agreed to the site, is the word elsewhere that significant?
Well, I think in some sense, the trial court found that because she agreed to put these sculptures at the Tatanka location permanently, that I think he arguably decided that it doesn't matter whether these are elsewhere or not. So I think we have two ways we could affirm on this is one, Tatanka is elsewhere. It's a standalone, separate site. It's a divided off 85 acres that's partitioned off, surveyed off. It's a dedicated standalone attraction. It's no longer part of something else. And indeed, it still exists today. And two, the trial court found that although she testified that she did not agree to Tatanka in the absence of the Dunbar, he specifically found that the facts presented at trial belie her assertions. Belie her assertions. Show them to be false. He didn't believe what she was saying. He believed that she agreed to place these sculptures at the Tatanka site, which happens to be elsewhere, permanently.
Did he make, the trial court make an express finding on her credibility?
No, but I think the word belie has certain connotations to it. And I would say if he did find that the facts presented at trial belie her assertions, and to show them to be false, I think he was saying, I believe somebody else, I'm not going to believe your rendition of the facts. But no, he did not make a specific finding that I do not find her to be credible. He just said, I don't believe what you're saying.
Back to the question of elsewhere, when was the 85 acres surveyed or platted or segregated, whatever the word is, from the other 1,000 in relation to this May 5, 2000 contract? Was that split before or after the contract?
I don't believe that was discussed. If it isn't, the record will reflect it. But my understanding is that it was divided off in the interim period between January 2002, when Mr. Costner first called Peggy to express his idea, and when she agreed. It was sometime between that and the dedication ceremony. I do believe Deadwood Land Holdings, which is a separate entity that holds Tatanka, was created sometime in April of 2002, but the record would have to reflect that. But I do believe it was divided off during this entire decision to place them at this site.
But it sounds like that's after this agreement.
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor, because I think that what the trial court did was said, I'm going to use the law of implied contracts here to determine whether or not the acts and conduct of the parties reflected an agreement to place these sculptures at the Tatanka site for the long term. So he looked at the conduct to see whether or not there was a meeting of the minds. And he said, based on the inferences from the conduct would be from January 2002 all the way through the dedication ceremony. And throughout that entire time period, based on the conduct of the parties and the words used by them, he found that the parties agreed to put these sculptures at the Tatanka site for the long term. It's for that reason that we think the elsewhere term really didn't have much, you know, concern anymore anyways. If she agreed to put them there for a long term, you know, we argued below that she was modifying her contract, at the very least. If it's not elsewhere, which we think it is elsewhere, we did argue below that the parties agreed to modify the contract to allow them to be placed at the Tatanka site.
Of course, our concern is, what was the party's intent in May of 2005 when they entered into the agreement, not what they were doing in 2002 or thereafter?
I think what the parties do in 2002 at the time they place the sculptures can definitely have an impact on the contract and whether or not a modification or a waiver was made. And I think the trial court found, one, that Tatanka is elsewhere, but two, that she agreed to place these sculptures at that site. You know, he looked at her, she had significant involvement in the placement of this. He looked not only at Costner's conduct, but he also looked at Peggy Detmer's conduct. And that conduct included, you know, receiving a telephone call from Costner, which she did not recollect what was discussed necessarily. It involved, she was on the construction team. She helped with the mock-up process to make sure that these sculptures could be placed precisely in a final placement, anchored down. All of this conduct, in taking part in the dedication ceremony and giving a speech, indicated that she was agreeable to put these sculptures at this location for the long term. It wasn't a temporary placement. And Costner's conduct confirmed all this. His testimony did too. You know, he testified at trial that had she not agreed to this placement, he would have never put this kind of resources in there. And I think that's what the trial court was trying to say when he found that this would be an absurd result to find otherwise. You know, if you read that portion of the memorandum decision, he was saying to decide that this was a unilateral decision would cause an absurd result. He was giving great weight to the fact that Kevin Costner put approximately $6 million into dedicating a site, a new attraction, the complete experience is what he called it, Now, this was what he called its own animal. It wasn't dependent on the Dunbar. And based on all this, the trial court found that Shue did, in fact, agree to put them there for the long term. You know, appellants are trying to turn this entirely factual dispute into a legal argument. But the whole issue at trial, the entire issue, was did Peggy Detmers agree to place these here independent of the Dunbar or only if the Dunbar was built? You know, this contract has absolutely no reference to a geographical location. The trial court finding a fact number...
Depending on what the words the Dunbar means.
Well, I think the Dunbar was something that had to be built. I think that's pretty clear from the contract. And if you look at finding of fact number 4, you'll see that he intended to place... both of these parties intended to place the sculptures in front of a hotel. You know, and throughout Koster's testimony, he you can tell that the Dunbar was a hotel. He continuously says these sculptures were going to be placed at the Tatanka site, whether the hotel was ever built or not. So it's pretty clear that what the parties anticipated was putting these sculptures in front of a hotel. That's finding fact number 4. And Koster's testimony confirms that I knew I had to place these. Unless we found they were going to be in front of the hotel, but they could be put somewhere else. And I think that's what the parties intended to do. They anticipated the situation where the Dunbar would not exist. And they said they can be placed anywhere else. I don't think the court, by any means, rewrote this contract. If I could, I'd like to read just a small snippet of Mr. Costner's speech at the dedication ceremony, because I think it's very indicative of what he was thinking, and I think it also goes to the conduct and words of the parties during this time period where the trial court found an implied contract. He said, "I had a plan. I would build the hotel, and I would build a train, and I would bring the people of this country and countries around the world to see and feel this place. All the work, all the ambition, and all the money I could possibly throw at this idea, and it wouldn't take. Today, what would logically seem like an end stands clearly as a beginning. I don't stand here triumphant, although I feel proud of the people who threw their energy into this project. Beginning with Peggy Detmers, whose artistry and skill and love of the land and respect for the people and animals that roamed it freely is expressed here for all time." You know, there's nothing equivocal about that. He was saying, "I don't know if the Dunbar is going to be built, but because we have this agreement to place these here at the Tatanka site for the long term," that he knew they were going to be expressed there forever. In conclusion, Your Honor, I think the trial court made a sensible decision based on the facts presented to him.
10 minutes.
The issue for the court was whether or not these parties agreed to put them at the location they are at. They were allowed to do that under the contract. The trial court listened to all the testimony, observed the demeanor of the witnesses, and decided who was to be believed. He did not believe Peggy Detmers. He believed Kevin Koster. And for that reason, we would respectfully request that this court affirm the trial court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ruiz. Mr. Damgaard, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you. Who the trial court did or did not believe had no bearing on the trial court's ultimate decision. Ultimately, the trial court interpreted elsewhere as anywhere and simply looked to whether there was an agreement. That's not the terms of the contract. You heard Mr. Weiss say time after time, they were agreeably displayed somewhere. They were agreeably displayed. It doesn't say that. And they absolutely knew that if this provision were to have meaning and come into effect, that we'd know that the Dunbar would not be built. Because if the Dunbar is built within 10 years, we don't look to whether they're agreeably displayed elsewhere. He didn't use agreeably displayed or agreeably displayed somewhere. He used agreeably displayed elsewhere. There has to be a frame of reference there. And if you look at paragraph...
What about the factual determination of whether or not she agreed to the placement? Are you saying that makes no difference?
No, and actually we'll concede that she agreed to the placement in 2003 of those sculptures on resort property while he still intended to build the resort and while the contract still provided yet another 7 years to build the resort. In other words, I think if this court agrees with the trial court that elsewhere is going to be anywhere, this will be a very short opinion if it's not affirmed by order. But, yeah, we're not disputing the agreed part. We're disputing the elsewhere, which has to be given meaning. And we know from paragraph 4, which dealt with an interim display arrangement, that's what the trial court found, I think he was correct with respect to paragraph 4, that these sculptures were going to go somewhere in 3 years. They had to, whether she agreed or not. Mr. Costner reserved the right to put them anywhere he wanted after 3, or she could agree to it, but they were going to go somewhere. That was never in doubt. And then in 2003, he necessarily would have incurred the expense that he did when he put them on the Dunbar property. In terms of the Dunbar being referred to as a hotel, I think you heard Mr. Weiss say that. The reason he's saying that, of course, is because if elsewhere does not mean anywhere, it's very productive to try and narrow the frame of reference to as small as possible. But that's not the case. Mr. Costner clearly used the term resort and Dunbar interchangeably in the agreement. And he testified at trial. In fact, I think it's within the first 7 pages of the trial transcript, Mr. Janklow asked, when we talk about the resort, we're talking about the Dunbar, right? Answer, right. We're not just talking about a hotel, we're talking about a resort, aren't we? That's right, which would include a golf course, correct? And Mr. Janklow goes on with the tennis courts, and finally Mr. Costner acknowledges that it was a 1,000-acre concept. The other thing you should look at is the trial court impliedly found that Dunbar referred to a resort, not a hotel. If you look at the memorandum opinion right at the beginning, trial court writes, Kevin Costner envisioned building a resort in Deadwood. The resort was to be named the Dunbar and originally included plans, and he goes on with the walking trail and the 5-star resort. So no, Dunbar did not refer to a hotel or a building. It referred to a 1,000-acre resort concept. In terms of the testimony of Wiss, that it was clear this was to be a standalone entity, the trial transcript will bear out what it will bear out, but he clearly said that he referred to standalone in the sense that everything on that would be a standalone. And it's also, I think, important to keep in mind, and this is part of the record, prior to trial, we took Mr. Wiss's deposition, and Mr. Janklow asked him, when the monument was placed, was the plan still to build the Dunbar? Answer, right. Question, so the place of the monument back in 2002, there was always an understanding, and it was being told to Peggy that the Dunbar was still going to be built, right? Answer, that was my understanding. Question, still your understanding today? Answer, right. When we got to trial, we asked that Mr. Wiss be sequestered. In the testimony, he'll show that he had a conversation with Mr. Nelson out in the hall as to whether there was a guarantee that the resort would be built. Mr. Wiss then came in and testified that there was never an understanding that the Dunbar would be built and that Tatanka should be a standalone entity. And I would submit that no reasonable trier of fact could rely on that. And if they could, I think we're at the point where factual findings shouldn't be reviewable. In terms of the statement in the memorandum decision that the trial court, that the testimony belies Ms. Detmer's assertions, he then lays out 4 reasons why they belie her assertions, and none of those reasons actually belie her assertions. First reason he gives is that the contract should have clued her off that the Dunbar would never be built. Well, I don't agree with that. He says that he doesn't anticipate it ever arise, that it wouldn't be built by 2010. He also says in paragraph 5, that the completion of the Dunbar would be the deadline for his advertising money deadline. I don't know why he'd be using the completion of the resort as a deadline if he never intended it to be built. And then, of course, Detmer's actions that she agreed to placement, we're not disputing that. The record's pretty clear that she was promised all this marketing, these royalty rights, and she constantly says she discounted her fee. The reason we have the contract is because she stopped working on the sculptures because the resort wasn't being built. Well, of course, in 2003, when her sculptures were finally going to be displayed on resort property with the intent that the resort still be built, and with people telling her that the resort was going to be built, of course she would take place, and of course she'd be delighted in that. So I don't think that belies her assertions either. And then finally, you just get that back to the funding thing, which is a trial court. Well, if he spent $6 million, it'd be absurd to hold him to his agreement. Well, he was going to spend $150 million on the resort. So this was a $6 million piece of a $150 million puzzle. And he also had projections that the resort would be generating, I think just the hotel alone, $25 million annually. So we don't think he can look at, he spent this much money, we shouldn't have to hold him to his obligations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.